Hey, gorgeous, if you want success on your fertility journey, you've got to have the mindset for it. It's time to kick fear, negativity, doubt, shame, jealousy, and the whole clown car of low-vibe fertility journey BS to the curb. I'm your host, Roseanne Austin, Fertility Mindset Master, former prosecutor and recovering type A control freak perfectionist. I use the power of mindset to get pregnant naturally and have my baby boy at 43, despite years of fertility treatment failure. I help women across the globe beat the odds on their fertility journey just like I did. Get ready for a quick hit of confidence, joy, feminine badassery, and loads of hell yes for your fertility journey. It's time to get fearless, baby, fearlessly fertile. Let's do this. Welcome to the Fearlessly Fertile Podcast, episode 268. From devastation to a fertility fairy tale ending she thought was impossible, Katie's story. Hey, my loves, I'm so delighted to be here with you this week. We just wrapped up the East Coast stops on the Fearlessly Fertile Live World Tour, and we are looking forward to other stops in North America, including Chicago. We're going to be doing some locations in Texas. It's going to be amazing. But in May, we are going to be heading to Europe. I'm super freaking excited about that. So it's with this energy that I wanted to share this week's interview with you because, look, everything about what I'm doing in my work and for the women that I serve is about helping you get to the next level on this journey, helping you make this baby dream come true. And a critical aspect of that is putting tools, strategies, testimonies in front of you that absolutely buck the system in the sense that, you know, scary fertility stories are a dime a fucking dozen, all right? All you have to do is a simple Google search and you'll see every fucking scary statistic. You'll see that now it's 1 in 5 couples, and that's up from 1 in 8 struggling with fertility. Fertility is a crisis right now. And instead of focusing on the negative shit, it's so critically important that you are flooding your heart and your mind with a focus on how you can be a fertility success. This is why my ladies' generosity in sharing their stories of triumph on this podcast is so fucking critical. And I really hope you turn this one in particular up because, okay, like all my ladies are gangsters. Let's be honest, okay? They are all gangsters in their own way. But what you're gonna find out is Katie took gangster to the next level because not only did she have to overcome repeated IVF failures, losses, you know, just so many different struggles on her journey, she also had to come back from a second trimester loss. And that kind of thing can like kick you and leave you on the ground. And like for some, they'll just never get up again. And what you're going to hear is how Katie overcame that and created what I call a fertility journey fairy tale, like real life, holy mackerel, I can't believe I just did this kind of experience in her life because she made a decision she was going to have her happy ending. Now, the fairy tale aspect of this, and I don't make light of this because I use this in a really powerful way, is that she was able to find resources within herself because her mindset was so strong, because she had done the work, because she refused to give up, to take that experience in her life and create an entirely different outcome. One that basically she was told wasn't going to happen. Okay, that's how powerful you are. That's what's possible when you get your mind on board. This is so important these days. This is your life. This is the dream that you have. So I really hope that you are going to take what Katie is going to be sharing to heart because you have the power within you right now to turn things around on this journey. And it all comes down to decisions that you're making and the way you think. Your brain is going everywhere with you. This is why mindset so often proves to be the missing link. So it is with all of this love, appreciation, and gratitude for Katie and so many of my ladies who have shared here that I am inviting you to listen to something that can just, that has the power to change your outlook on this journey completely. So it's with that love and with that excitement, I share my conversation with Katie.
Katie, we're having this conversation, woman.
Yes, we are. Yes.
Oh my goodness. Okay. First of all, I have to ask what I love to ask. Can you believe we're having it?
I knew you were going to ask me this question, and I'm going to say what a lot of other people say is yes and no, but probably more yes than no. I mean, I role played having this conversation with you probably about a year ago, right? That's how committed I was to it happening. So I guess more yes, actually. But then there's a part of me that is still occasionally in disbelief. I'm so happy and I'm so proud and grateful. That's how I'm feeling right now. Yeah.
Me too. I got to admit, like when I was, you know, when I was prepping for this, like I was getting a little misty about this, yeah. Knowing your story and just the impact that it's going to have and the gratitude that I have that you're sharing it. So why don't you start off by sharing with the ladies listening how you found yourself on this journey and how we met?
Yeah. So I go back a long way because your message is you're the fertility mindset master, right? Which of course you are. And for me, I was the polar opposite. I was a disaster. I mean, literally, I when I talk about it, I think, God, am I sounding too dramatic? But no, I really had a very problematic mindset that started in my late teens. Okay, so that's kind of where the story began. And I appreciate for some women when they encounter difficulties conceiving and carrying pregnancies to term, it's a surprise to them when it becomes difficult. For me, this felt like a long, slow, ominous train coming down the line for years. And it's crazy. So I think by the time I met you, I was already kind of 20 years for feeling a certain kind of way. But when I met you, Roseanne, it was certainly a pivotal moment. It was a crossroads, you know, and I'll certainly love to talk about exactly why that was. But I guess I do have to start from the beginning, which, yeah, it was my late teens. And I kind of developed a sort of a belief system, really. And that belief system was, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with you and you can't have a baby. And it just sort of lingered and it loitered and it was always there in the background. And it sort of seeped into other areas of my life and it would pop up very discreetly. But I carried it as some kind of secret. I didn't talk about it. It was sort of shaped with a bit of shame. And when you don't talk about things, it stays very, you know, it kind of just stays put. But yeah, that was the feeling that I had. And later in life, when I got a bit more insightful and I'd lived a bit more life and I started getting more curious and asking more questions, I thought, well, why? Have I felt this way? This is crazy. And it was a perfect combination, a perfect storm, if you like, of I had some hormonal things. I called it a bit wonky. I felt a bit wonky in my mid-teens. There was a thinking for a while that I might have had PCOS because some of the symptoms I had. But I developed a sort of a mistrust in my body. You know, my body was doing things that didn't feel like it was functioning as female, as a woman should. And that was very, very potent. And it affected me very deeply, much more than I think I really realized at the time. Because again, I wasn't sharing it. I kept it all inside. And then the other aspect was probably some, you know, emotional stuff to do with a relationship with my own mum. I love my mum very much. And we have a good relationship now. But at that time in my life, it was complicated. And I think the two of those things together, without me really fully realizing, created this mindset, this belief system, and it really locked itself in hard. And it kind of went through my 20s. When I was in my early 20s, my menstrual cycle just stopped out of the blue for about 7 months. And again, everything became validation. Everything was validation to the fact that this thing that I felt was correct. I had a dream. I mean, it was a dream. But this dream was so visceral to me. And again, it was like, right, that's confirmation that this is some kind of higher power message that you, Katie, can't have a baby. You know, how could your body conceive and do something so amazing as grow a baby? So I went through my 20s and it impacted, yeah, it impacted my relationships, how I felt about myself around other people. And in fact, the first time I probably experienced a mindset shift was in my late 20s. And I had a bit of therapy. Bit of talking therapy. And that really helped lift something I felt about meeting somebody and finding a relationship. And as soon as that shifted, it just felt light and easy. And 2 months later, I met my partner, Adam, and we've been together now. It will be 10 years this year. Okay. So that 10 years has gone by real quick. Yeah. But looking back, I think, oh shit. Yeah. The mindset changed, the outcome changed. But I didn't register fully that that's what had happened. But still, I wasn't really sharing how I felt about having a baby. My coping mechanism, and I don't know if anyone can relate to this, is the way I camouflaged it was to become a big people pleaser. Because my profession is I'm a performer, I'm a musician, so I can put on a bit of a show, right? And I love it, and that's a big part of who I am. But I also now understand that I used it, I weaponized it to to keep things at a distance, to keep things feeling safe, to be in a slight denial, to kind of just bat it away. And I would people please. And I did that when I was dating because it felt like I had to hustle. I have to hustle for this. I have to keep working really hard to keep this relationship going, to keep this person happy, because I was fighting this deep-rooted insecurity, huge insecurity that there was a problem. And even when I met Adam and I had this, you know, very different experience of that relationship, the baby thing, it was still clinging on. So, but this whole time, you know, I'm 36 now and I'd never attempted to try to get pregnant, right? So this fear, this mindset was based on nothing but my own head and how powerful my mind is and was in a bad way. I'd had no tests. I had no doctor tell me, yeah, you're right, nothing. So I was incredibly committed. I was very loyal. I was very tenacious, actually, about this particular way of thinking. So we got to 36 and again, I sort of sat back and I remember my 35th birthday, which is this age that you talk about, like this bullshit sort of number where on the strike of midnight, you turn 35 and it all, you know, falls off the edge of a cliff. And I remember my 35th birthday just feeling a little bit upset inside and just feeling disjointed. But I still couldn't express it. I couldn't fully express it. So we reached a point where we were both sort of saying, because I knew Adam wanted to have children. That was really important. And we started trying. And I remember this voice, and you call it saboteur. You know, that's your language for it. And I called it my gremlin. That was my sort of way of describing it. And the gremlin piped up and said, get ready. Okay, Katie, you're going to try and have a baby. Right, we'll get ready for the shit show. I remember standing in my old flat and hearing this voice. And this voice has been, you know, it's been so deeply unkind, Roseanne. Just so, when I look back and I'm so glad that I can look back now and see it for what it was, but it was so deeply unkind and really toxic, actually. So we started trying, but you're trying for something all the while. This script is running in the background saying, what are you doing? Forget about it. This ain't going to happen. 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, we weren't falling pregnant, but actually, I was becoming more curious and more proactive in my own menstrual cycle. You know, I was learning about when I was ovulating. So that bit was positive. Went to the doctors, did the standard tests, and I was bracing for this kind of like dystopian moment where, you know, you've for so long you thought the boogeyman's under the bed and then you look and yes, there he is. But it didn't happen. All my tests were normal. The plot twist was that it was actually Adam's results were a little bit that maybe there was a reason why we weren't getting pregnant. He had low morphology. So more tests, more investigations. Again, nothing coming up for me. Everything internally was normal, you know, this word normal, everything's normal. But after 18 months of trying, we hadn't fallen pregnant. And this was just turning the volume up even louder on this gremlin that was kind of going, aha, you know, what did you think was going to happen? And it's exhausting. It's exhausting because you feel like you're dragging this sodding thing around with you that is just bringing you down. It's knocking you down. It's how it felt. It was sort of like this slug just sort of draped around me. And I'd already, you know, I'd already cried so many tears and felt a certain kind of way about something so many years before. But here I was in real time. And it's very weird, very odd feeling like, well, it's coming to fruition. It's actually playing out. So after 18 months, we'd lined ourselves up with some IUI with the NHS. We were fortunate you get offered 4 free goes. And I was thinking it might not happen because the doctor was going to be on holiday when I was expecting my cycle. But bloody typical. He's on his holidays. We're going to have to wait another cycle. But actually, my period didn't show up. It didn't show up. And 3-4 days passed and I was thinking, oh my God. And I know a lot of people listening will love taking pregnancy tests and pee sticks. I'm not that person. I like to stay in a place of maybe. Oh, maybe. But after a week, I love a maybe. But after about a week, I really started to think, okay, I think I'm pregnant. And then for some obscure reason, I was thinking, I'll wait till the Monday. It was the Sunday. I'll wait till the Monday to test and then I'll tell Adam and we'll have this fairy tale ending. On the Sunday morning, I woke up and I started bleeding. poor Adam, bless him, he didn't know what was happening. Just, he just sort of woke up to find me, you know, very emotional. And we talked about it, and almost to the point where I started to doubt if I had been pregnant, because at that point the pregnancy test wasn't showing as negative. But later that day, physically, it was undeniable. I was having a very early miscarriage, and we went straight into IUI, because by the pure fact that we'd conceived, something got unlocked. It's like, hang on a minute, this doesn't follow the narrative that you've been sticking with, because that message was, you can't get pregnant. Well, I just did. No, it didn't last, but hey, miscarriages, they're not uncommon, especially the first pregnancy. So it unlocked something, and I went, you know, bounding forwards with this new type of feeling into our IUI. I remember it was like, it was a May, and it was a beautiful sunny day in London. And I'm not exaggerating what I say. When the sun is shining in London, you know, that's enough to put you in a great mood. But I felt good. I felt really good. And we went in, had you know, and 2 weeks later, I got a positive pregnancy test. I got my first positive pregnancy test. And I think I felt happy for about a day. And I can only describe as a feeling of being hijacked with anxiety. Because what happens is, if you're so committed and you're so entrenched in a way of thinking that you don't even realize that you're immersed in this belief system, when you do something that shifts, it can feel a bit unsafe, because the brain, which I've learned, loves familiarity. It likes certainty. And my certainty was all of this negative shit. But hang on a minute, here I was with this positive pregnancy test, and it was just overwhelm. And I got taken over by anxiety. Now, anxiety has been something that I have been felt very unwell with, you know, as I sort of can share what happened to me. But anxiety took over, and that showed up in, you know, waking up very early, feeling shaky, having sort of low level feelings of panic, pacing. I remember going around the block at like 6 a.m. because I couldn't cope with the notion that my body was pregnant, because I'd worked so hard for so long to convince myself that something's wrong. So now it just shifted to, this isn't going to last. This is, you know. So I went for an early scan, just thinking this early scan is the thing that's going to just put me in my place, and it's going to be proof that everything's okay. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. The scan was very inconclusive. The sonographer was very tentative, planned to go back 2 weeks later. But actually, by that time, about 2 weeks later, I experienced my second miscarriage. It was a natural miscarriage. It happened at home. And that really made the first loss land, because I don't think the first loss didn't really land, because that was the unlocking of, oh my God, we got pregnant. This second loss, the first loss suddenly kind of felt a different kind of way. And I was feeling, it was frightening. And it was just, I keep saying the word weird, because it is very weird to feel like your nightmare is coming true. This playing out in real time. So I think I spent a summer recovering emotionally. And we went again for a second IUI, and that wasn't successful. And then we were lined up to go for some IVF with the NHS. Again, by that point, because of my age, I think I was 38, we could still get a free go. And the doctors I was seeing, I think this is again, when I think back, I'd started to see quite a few different people by this point. You know, the further into this process, the more people that you encounter. And I realized I'd encountered some really less favorable language from some of the doctors. I remember getting a letter I was copied into a letter, I think, from one doctor to another. And on the letter, it's very brief. It said, I've consulted with Katie. She's 37, so time is not on her side. And I remember standing in my bedroom, reading this letter, hearing, you know, and that was the first time it was like a dagger to the heart. And I remember another doctor, again, just saying, well, you might as well go straight for IVF, bringing up my age. And I don't want to sound like I know a lot of people. And as you say, Roseanne, it's not about slamming all, you know, all medical people. But I think that was, I understood that you hear these different things and it doesn't make you feel good. So, but we were lined up for this round of IVF at the end of 2019. Same thing happened. Period was late. Took a pregnancy test. I was pregnant for the third time, naturally for the second time. And I remember that Christmas we went away, we came to New York, didn't tell anybody. and went for an early scan. This time it was different. There was a heartbeat. So we'd never had that before. And the sonographer this time said, well, look, because of what's gone before, let's be cautious and let's bring you back. And I think I still wouldn't say I felt happy. I think anxiety still very much was with me. You know, it wasn't an easy time. Being pregnant did not feel like an easy time. And we went back 2 weeks later. And unfortunately, once again, well, this time it was confirmed. This pregnancy had ended. No heartbeat. And we later found out that it was a chromosomal problem. But the miscarriage physically was on a whole other level. Physically, it was very, very difficult, very painful. It took about a month. You know, I experienced extreme sort of physical trauma, I guess. Got to February 2020, and we're getting into the COVID phase. So my world felt like it was turned on its head, and then it felt like the whole world did the same thing. It was a very strange parallel. And we were fortunate to get some private tests. Took loads of bloods, because this whole time I was thinking, it was like the Da Vinci Code. I was thinking, I need to solve this puzzle. I need to know the answer. Have I been a psychic the whole time? You know, am I in tune with this sort of higher knowing? And I've known this whole time, and what did I expect? Or is it just a complete coincidence? Or is my mind so powerful that I've actually cultivated this? I've brought this. And I thought about it so much. Blood tests didn't really reveal much. And I think it was sort of going into the autumn of 2020 where we went into we paid privately for some IVF, mild IVF, where the notion is you take less medication, but you're meant to get better quality. And that first round, again, anybody listening who's done IVF for the first time, you think, this is going to solve it. This is going to be the answer. And we got eight eggs, and they were all mature. They all fertilized. And I thought, oh, God, here we go. Okay, now the tides are turning. Maybe we're going to win. We're going to win this time. And like a game of snakes and ladders, right? Sometimes you think you've got do you know snakes and ladders? Do you have that game? Sometimes you think you've got a ladder.
You know, and you know chutes and ladders is, I think, what we had okay. In the States. Maybe it's ladders, the same thing. Yeah.
So you think you've got a ladder, right? You think you've done this, woohoo. And then on a dime, you get a snake. And all of our embryos, all eight embryos, none of them were any good. None of them made it. So we came back with a zero. And again, this hustle, the whole time I felt like I've got to hustle for this. I've got to hustle for this baby. I've got to work harder. So I did all the things. I've been doing all the things, acupuncture, nutrition, everything, kinesiologist, therapy, everything, urologist, the best urologist in the country. So we went into the second round thinking, okay, right, we're going to outsmart this. We're going to beat this by doing this aggressive kind of full on coming at it from all angles. And actually, that second go, we got fewer eggs, fewer embryos, and still ended up with a zero, still zero. So April 2021 was probably, I feel like I've fallen apart so many times, but I really felt like I unraveled fully. And I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but sometimes when that happens, as hideous as it is and as frightening as it is, it's also quite amazing because you feel like you're just opening yourself wide open. I felt like I was surrendering to something, just surrendering. And that's when I found your book. Okay, so this is the point, Roseanne, where I saw your book and I ordered the book and the book arrived and I took the book to bed and I think I read it, you know, within 3 days. And it was like a little comfortable, warm, wonderful thing that I took to bed with me in the best possible way. And the way I would describe it is like, your voice was like a beacon. It was like having a hype girl, you know, a cheerleader. And wow, after everything, not just in the few years that had passed, but everything else, it was electricity. It was kind of this energy came in. And so thank you for writing your book.
And welcome.
Yeah, thank you. And I thought, fucking hell, where has this voice been? Because I wasn't able to give this voice to myself and no one else around me could give it to me. So that's what you did. And when I'd finished the book, I did something quite unlike me and I you know, I took a step to book in, and we had a call, we had a chat. And then the next thing was I was signed up to your 8-week program. And in fact, this room I'm sitting in was where I spent most of the time when I was on the calls with you. Yeah. So it feels emotional. Yeah.
I know.
So the 8 weeks on a Saturday, and I know, again, because I've listened to so many of your podcasts, and I've gotten so much from not just listening to you, but listening to the other women speaking, but those who've done the course with you, what it gave, other than your guidance and your wisdom, it gave me community. It gave me a community with people that I could see, because there's communities online, but that can be a real rabbit hole, you know, and it can feel very disconnected. This was incredibly connected. I got community and I got connection. And it was like bearing witness to other people and their stories. And it made me feel less alone, because it's just amazing to me that women, we still feel so alone when we're going through it. It feels like we are the only ones. And with my own kind of story, I felt, well, what I would always be very tentative, and if I would share it with people, because I thought they're just going to look at me like I'm loco, you know. You had a dream when you were 19, but what are you talking about? But for me, it was real. For me, it was, and here I was, having had these experiences, which were literally real. So I got so much out of that time. Even if I was just listening, and I was listening to the way that you were talking, and I felt like I became like a student in a way, because I'm very interested in the mind-body connection. I've become really keen to understand and learn and read, and that's what you gave. You gave a lot of recommendations of other people's work, you know, not just what from you, but from what other people had written about. So I ordered more books, and more books arrived, and I read those books, and I was underlining stuff, and it was an authentic excitement. It wasn't coming from a place, I've got to hustle, and I'm afraid. It was very positive. And I remember I'd come out the room after a coaching call, and I'd almost like go next door and give Adam a little pep talk. Right, okay, come on, here we go. Yeah. And he's, God love him, he's a, you know, he's a very easygoing man, and he would just look at me and nod and smile. And we went into the third round of IVF, and this is the key thing, right? I went into that third round feeling different, and I felt better, and I felt like I got some power back, because I handed so much of it. I just sort of offloaded so much to other people. And regardless of the outcome, regardless, because there are no guarantees, who doesn't want to go through a cycle of IVF feeling better, feeling energized? So we did that. We didn't have as many embryos as the first, but more than the second. And I went in for a day 3 transfer, not knowing, having no idea what we were working with, but we knew that we were going to do a transfer. Going into the room, and they said, yes, we have a good embryo today. And I remember just lying there, literally trying to high five the doctor and the nurse, because I was loving everyone around me. Because I remember you talked about vibrations and higher frequencies. And that's what I really resonated with. I said, I'm going to go through this IVF on a higher frequency. That's what I'm going to do. So even the nurse who took my blood, and she'd seen me right through, she started kind of like responding to me differently. How's my Katie today? Oh, you're my favorite patient. I love you. Whoa, where's this come from? And I believe it's because I was just bringing this whole new frequency. So the transfer was good, and I felt good. And 2 weeks later, a positive pregnancy test. But it felt, of course, because this is the way. I shared that news with you, and we'd been having some one-to-one calls. And I didn't get a scan until I was about 13 weeks. And the scan was good. I'll never forget it. It was amazing. You know, there was a fully formed baby. Everything looked normal. Everything looked fine. And the following week, we told our parents, and before I hadn't allowed myself, and perhaps hadn't been given the opportunity to really indulge in all of that stuff, where how are we going to tell people the cute ways that you can let people know? So we planned all of that, went back home, told our parents, and then a week later had just a standard scan with the NHS. And, you know, probably one of the worst days of my life. They told us that the woman, again, completely different sonographer, always seeing different people. She was just quiet, and that quietness I'd felt I'd had before. And I was just lying there, and I just thought, you've got to be kidding me, because I knew. And she said, I'm so sorry. And it's difficult to verbalize what that feels like. I think I went into a state of shock, and I don't want to minimize or feel like I'm skimming over this part. But one of the first things that came into my mind was, what are we going to tell our parents? That was the first thing that came in, was thinking about what it's going to feel like for them. And that process physically obviously is quite different because you're that much further along. I was 16 and a half weeks, and it was horrific. It was complete trauma, that loss. And I remember the bereavement midwife coming in, and I was just, I hadn't slept. It's almost like you have an out-of-body experience. And I remember her saying to me, look, we're going to bring your baby back in for a second time. You know, do you want to see your baby one more time? Because she said, I know you might not like me saying this to you, but this might be the only chance you get. There may not be another baby. So do you want to see your baby one more time? And you know what? The first thing I thought was, fuck that, fuck off. I didn't say it to her. That was the thought I had. And here's the really interesting thing. Because for all of the gremlin, I've had this kind of counter voice, which you say, Roseanne, is the desire. It's the desire in your heart. And that's what came up in that moment. It was a sort of a rude response to this woman telling me there may not be. And that was a desire in my heart, just letting rip. But I nosedived, and I went downhill, understandably, because I was completely, it's so hard to find the right words. I was so completely and utterly perplexed. I couldn't believe what had happened to me, that this was, like, again, my worst nightmare coming true. And they subsequently couldn't find a reason. The baby, it was a baby girl, couldn't find a reason why this had happened. And so the pain I was in and the grief, and it's really important not to conflate the two things. For anybody's experienced loss, you need to have that space to grieve. That is an emotional thing in itself. You need to honor that. You need to feel those feelings and let that pain happen. And I did. And I understand that friends and family would say, maybe is it enough now, Katie? Because they'd seen everything else that had gone before, the previous losses, the pain, the struggle, the financial investment. I understand that people that love you say, maybe gently, is it time? But I knew that, no, let me grieve the loss of this baby. But no, it doesn't work like that. That's not how it works. So alongside all the grieving, and I was quite unwell with anxiety, and it's really important that people get help for that. Look after yourself. And I did. Something else was happening that I think the desire in my heart, I suddenly realized that's not gone away. Hang on a minute. Let's just review. Even after everything, that still hasn't gone away. Okay, maybe it's about time I really pay attention to that and I give that due credit. And we went into, it was about a year, and we were ready to go back to a different clinic, and they specialized in sort of immune therapy. It's very expensive, blood test, did a monitoring cycle. But by this point, I just felt this a peacefulness. And I remember going into that clinic, and I was smiling, because through all the shit, the onslaught, something that I believe now is this gift. And I know that you say a lot, really, I really recognize this point, that actually these things can sometimes be happening for you, and that there's a gift at the end of it. And that gift was, I got really, really good at knowing exactly what I wanted, what my boundaries were. The people pleasing went right away. The pendulum had to swing quite hard over to one side. And it meant that for a little bit, it was probably felt a bit harsh, because I retreated quite a lot. But in that retreat, in that solitude, I got so amazing at listening to exactly, well, what do I need? What's good for me? How am I going to love myself? And this voice was, I say, it was like the voice of the most compassionate, loving mother. I developed a voice of a loving mother, and I went into my IVF with this loving mother. Even when I decided, it's such a minute thing, but even when I decided I don't want to get on the underground, because that makes me feel a bit anxious, I'm going to get the bus. And I'm not going to beat myself up and tell myself I'm being ridiculous. I'm going to get on the bus, even if it means I have to leave half an hour earlier. I'm going to get on the bus and I'm going to enjoy looking outside and seeing the view of central London, because that's what I want to do. And it's such a simple thing, just to tweak the way that you view an approach. So we did this monitoring cycle and they were just saying, everything looks good, everything looks good. And I just kept hearing it. And people will know this. You get a phone call and you hear the sound of that phone ringing and it can just fill you with dread because you're going to be told the results. And so previously, those results were not good. But picking up the phone to this clinic and hearing that, you know, everything looks fine, just this monitoring cycle. And maybe deep inside this subconscious, this inner kind of instinct said, yeah, everything is going to be fine. And we got to April of 2023. And, you know, I'd had this great day at work. I'm self-employed. A big part of what I do is I run choir. So I'm in front of a lot of people and it's me. It's me in the room and I'm the one that's leading. I'm the one that's inspiring and energizing, you know, in that context. That's how I do it. And I did this big workshop. Les Mis. People love Les Mis. I personally don't get it, but they love it. And I did this big workshop. My most successful thing, there was like 150 people and I'd planned a party afterwards with sandwiches and tea. I ordered way too many sandwiches. It was ridiculous. But I remember thinking, I am, and this is all tagged onto the way I started to feel. I'm amazing. I'm bossing it because I know, because I'm a mama, I got this, you know. I'd done lots of things previously in my career, but there was something about this day where everything just flowed. It was the most successful thing. I got a guy in who used to be in the show and he came and he sung and everybody loved it. And I'd done the arrangement. I'd done everything. And I was saying to myself, God, this is brilliant, Katie. You know, you've got this. You're fantastic. I was really being this loving, kind, mothering voice to myself. And I was also expecting my period that day. And it didn't. I went to the bathroom and no period. And I think looking back, I knew. But still, I didn't want to dare to kind of go there just yet. Anyway, suffice to say that I was pregnant. And by now I'm 41 and a half. But the other wonderful thing from having worked with you, Roseanne, is that age became irrelevant. So by 40th and going beyond 40, no longer held this icky kind of thing that 35 did. So again, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
It wasn't going to be a thing for me. So let's give context of where I was. I was 41 and a half and I was pregnant and it wasn't a walk in the park. No, there were moments where I could feel that anxiety wanted to come in. But by now I had accumulated so many resources. I had filled my mind and my soul with so many things to help me that I navigated through those moments so much better. There was no more pacing or early morning walks. I could move through those moments and come out the other side. And I trusted this voice inside that said, everything's going to be okay. Now, again, my way was to not tell family, partly self-preservation, but also wanting to protect them a bit. But this pregnancy went to full term. We had our daughter at the end of November. Her name is Riley, and she's next door right now. She's being very cool. I mean, she's fine. And she is just everything I hoped and dreamed for and knew. But still, there's those moments where I look at her and think, my God, it's you. You're here. She brings so much joy to our family, you know. And I think being able to do this with you is like my way of being able to share my story, not just to people I don't know and have never met, but also I will share it with people that I do know, because I didn't necessarily fully talk about the way that I thought and felt for so many years, because it made me feel odd. It made me feel a bit estranged, because I thought, I know nobody else feels this way, because it just seems so improbable. And I guess when I messaged you, and I did tell you after I'd had our daughter, the thing is to say that in spite of all the terrible, awful things that we encountered, and not just the losses, all the other things, you know, the disappointing phone calls, all the months that we weren't pregnant, all of that, all the tears, in spite of all of that, and even when, you know, working with you, and then I still experienced the loss. And there was a part of me that was just like, fuck this. This is just, let watch it burn. It's bullshit, you know, because it doesn't matter what you say. I can't escape this because this has been coming for me. I know you can't tell me. In spite of all of that, you can still, there's always a way back. You can always come back, you know? So if you're feeling that way, if you're in that place and you're listening to this, you can always come back. Because I know I felt that way listening, going, walking and listening and just feeling better after hearing other people sharing. So that's what I'm so appreciative of, to be, you know, like here talking to you. And that brings us right up.
Yeah.
Present day.
I mean, ow. Wow. I mean, when you think about that, Katie, I mean, like just hearing, like I could feel myself like breathing shallow, yeah. You know, like as I'm like listening to this. I mean, you know, but being alongside you as this is happening, one of the most powerful, I mean, you were dropping bombs left and right, but one of the things that really caught my attention was your realization of that desire in the middle of being absolutely gutted and shattered. The response from within you was, fuck that. Like the sound and the voice of your inner knowing that you desire this child and there is a child for you, and you're not just going to come in here and tell me there may not be another child. Like, it's so fascinating to me how we can't outrun truth. Truth was there the whole fucking time. And it came up loud in the face. I mean, because you could have just easily bought that. Like, and I'm not saying that that woman had evil intent, not at all. You know, some people come into our lives and they think that they're helping us by encouraging us to leave the dream or to abandon the dream. But in that pivotal moment, you heard truth.
I really did. I really did. And I think that's so important, that if people don't feel like they're in touch with that part of themselves, there's things that you need to do to help you. I mean, for me, it was this very profound moment. But I think there is this internal truth. There's this internal world that we are creating. And I think there are things that people can do to help really fine tune that. And that's what you're doing, really. You're helping women get much better, or even just do it at all in the first place, to find a way to listen to that. And I heard it loud and clear in that moment. And now I look back and I realize that even more. Yeah.
So what was it like? I mean, so you were truly, I mean, the day that you found out you were pregnant with Riley, like it was flow. Like you were just, I mean, it was one of those, it sounds to me like the way you've described it, it's one of those apex moments where we're just like, boom, like everything is flowing. We're in the moment. We're feeling this. You have that sense of inner knowing. Like, how has that influenced you since? Because like one of the things, like whenever a woman tells me she's pregnant, or, you know, I'm like, please don't ever forget how powerful you are. Please, if you take nothing else from this, remember this moment, because that's just giving you the tip of the iceberg of what's possible. So how has that affected you since then?
It has. I know I'm going to carry it forward into other things in my life. It's far reaching. So making decisions, making important life decisions, perhaps in ways that I'd kept myself a little bit small, I feel like now I have this new kind of superpower that serves me so well that I feel that this whole new potential has come in. And I don't know exactly where that's going to go, but I know that because of what I've experienced and learned, it has this beautiful forward motion that is going to benefit the way that I'm a parent and the way that I can achieve other things. So I don't know yet. I'm looking forward to seeing, but I do feel like I've got this whole new thing in my pocket now. It's with me all the time.
It's a new adventure. You've discovered an entirely different aspect of yourself, you know, and I want to take a step back, because one of the, you know, I know women listening to this are always wondering. So you had said you had gone to a new clinic. You'd done this immune thing. Was there anything they did differently? Was it you? Like, what did you notice was different?
I think actually we never got to the point with having any kind of treatment with this clinic because I was already pregnant, but it was the monitoring cycle that they did, that they wanted to just see where I'm at, you know, what my levels are at and everything. the blood test they took, and they actually, I think they send it off to Chicago.
Oh, yeah, probably to Dr.
Chicago, they're reading for sort of natural killer cells and certain other immune-related things. And I remember my results came back for two things a little bit high. So they were going to make a plan to give me this drug for a couple of months and then retest. And I remember thinking, okay, you know, if that's what feels like is the right thing to do, then it will be. The difference was in me in thinking I'm not going to clench my fists and feel like I'd have shut my eyes and just hold my breath almost. I feel like I've held my breath for so many years. But I was ready to move through with this process, listening far more loudly to this feeling of the desire other than the gremlin voice. That was the difference. Even though we didn't actually go through with any treatment with this clinic.
So I want to make sure that the women listening understand this point, because this is so critical. So with all of the things that you had gone through, your initial recurrent miscarriage, your loss of your daughter at 16 weeks, finally hearing this insane desire in you and moving through that grief and moving through that process and allowing yourself to become even more clear about who you actually are, where your boundaries are, and eliminating things from your life that weren't serving you, there was an openness in you that said, okay, let me start to check out the next step. Let me go to this clinic. Let me make this investment to find out, is there something else I'm not seeing? That level of openness led you to a place where you didn't even need the fucking treatment, Katie.
No, I didn't. I was willing.
Well, and then sometimes that's all it takes, is that part of you that opens up, that something that had not worked before and that maybe you could have been afraid of, because think about it, you had natural pregnancies before and you could have been in a place because of the gremlin that you were carrying saying, you know, this is never going to work for you. You know, look at your past. Like, you had become something so different from that, that when you find out you're pregnant naturally after all of this craziness, all of the heartache, all of the heartbreak, that you could be in a place where, and you're doing this event with 150 people and you're at this, you know, peak moment, I'm okay. My baby's okay. That's so huge, because I mean, I felt the same way when I was pregnant with Asher. Like, all of these people were coming, like, because, you know, by that time, you know, and with my shady fertility history, like, we conceived him naturally. I wasn't worried at all. Like, I was just like, he's here. This is what was meant for me. I mean, you know, and we all have, like, you have a choice the whole time. You could live your pregnancy in fear, or you could live it in the joy that you've created. And it sounds like you found that place.
Yeah, and it is as simple as that. It's a choice. It is a choice. And I chose to celebrate this amazing fact of the matter that I still really, really felt this strong, beautiful desire. And I decided that that was the truth. And that when I discovered I was pregnant, you would think that progressively, the more stuff, that this would be the time I'd be absolutely falling down, you know. And I was the opposite. I mean, a week before we had her, I was standing in front of my choirs. I was bopping along and waving my hands and shaking my, you know, whatever. And my members were a bit like, are you okay? Take it easy.
Be pregnant, lady.
I was fine. And the baby was moving inside me. One of the songs we did was Sweet Child of Mine. I mean, what are the chances? And so I could feel her moving around. And yeah, because I just kept coming back to this thing, which was a choice to come back to, which, yeah.
Wow.
It was the loving mother that I'd found for myself through the pregnancy. Mm.
I love that for you. And I've got to ask, is it what you thought it would be?
Oh, yes. But again, this is where what I've learned, this gift has really helped, because it's suddenly when you're pregnant and you have a baby, all of this other stuff comes in and people come in and they have things that they tell you. But because of what I've gained, I knew that that wasn't going to make me wobble or overthink or worry, because my obsessive drew, but it's on her terms, actually, isn't it? But yeah, I haven't let this external...
She's your daughter, yeah, Katie.
I haven't let this external space come in and dictate, you know?
Mm.
So, and of course, it's just beyond. It's wonderful, magical. You know, my mum came to visit me yesterday, and we went out, and just both of us sat there. My mum and I sat gazing down at my daughter, and we have the same eyes, right? So I get my mother's eyes, and Riley has my eyes. And yeah, so you can't beat that. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
And now you know, Katie, that you can pass this on to her. You can teach her from a place of knowing. You're not just going to pep talk her because it's something you heard on the television. It's something that you have learned through your own life experience. And you're going to be able to foster in her that resilience. Because frankly, I mean, like, you did the hardest thing you could possibly do. You came back from the darkness. And now, like, you can fucking do anything. Like, truly, like, I always tell women, I'm like, look, after you've called in this miracle baby, business, record deals, whatever it is that you want, that's a piece of cake, you know, by comparison. So I just, you know, I'm so grateful not only to know you and have had the honor to be by your side. It's just extraordinary to me to be reminded of the power of when a woman really gets into that desire, the power of the yes, the power of trusting yourself over your fear that you chose something higher. And I would love it if, like, if you could say anything, like if you think back to the woman that you were when you were a listener, when you were just a listener as opposed to a guest, like, what would you want these women listening to know in addition to what you've shared?
The first, the main thing is acknowledge, celebrate, and feel proud of yourself for really recognizing that you have this desire to have to bring your baby in. That's fantastic. That's brilliant. And that is the starting point. Don't let that light dim, you know? Show yourself an abundance of kindness and love and respect, because that's just precious. That's the main starting point, because it took me a long, long time to get to that point. And the second thing I'd say, that if you feel like you've been on this hamster wheel and things haven't been working and it's just felt so stressful and it's brought you so much unhappiness and worry and fear, I was swimming in a pool of fear and scarcity. Start to ask different questions, get curious, be humble, open up to the ways that there are the resources to strengthen your mind-body connection. If you've never meditated, if you're a bit dismissive, you're a bit unsure, well, why don't you explore that more? There are so many things that we can overlook, and certainly connecting with what you create, the platform that you offer, don't deny yourself that. Because it is such a key piece. And if those two things running alongside, if nothing else, regardless of what the outcome is and what the result is, you're going to feel better and you're going to see it create waves and consequences and impacts in your life just in general. And that is a positive thing.
Mm.
And then just let it go from there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's living proof of thoughts, beliefs, actions, results. I mean,
100%.
Like, I mean, it blows my mind, Katie. And, you know, and from where we stand today, it's easy for us to see. But it's also, you know, people are so quick to want to look at everything else instead of themselves, when the ability and the drive and the desire, it's all here. It's like all starts here, but this is the last place we look.
From the neck down.
That's right. And
I got to say that one of the best things you said, like, I love your hell yes, you know, it's the hell yes to it. That's what I sort of made me feel so joyous. And I remember there was a chorus and you said probably one of the best things ever. You said, I'm not dicking around with maybe. And I'll never forget that. That's the best thing anyone's ever said.
ever. Life is too short for me.
Exactly.
Katie. But like it's either hell yes or hell no. Yeah, there's no exactly. in between.
That's it.
Like life is way too short for beige. It's way too mm-hmm. short for maybe. Like we can't live that way. And especially not if you're a woman with a big vision for her life. Like you have, and like you have for your daughter and your daughter's daughters. And, you know, it's just, we are literally shaping our family tree by leaving old stories behind and creating a new path for our families to be heading in. And I'm so freaking happy for you. You have just created this new path for your family. And it all started with you being willing to answer the call, you being willing to move past the fear, your excuses. And, oh, can I do this? Like, and it's just, that's why, like, this, you sharing your experience is just such a blessing to all of us, Katie. And I'm so grateful. Thank you so much. You're changing so many lives by speaking your truth and sharing what's real for you. So thank you so much for joining us, woman. And you got to hug Riley for me. And I cannot wait. I'm going to let you, you know, we're doing the world tour. So the world tour is coming to the UK.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm here. I'm in West London. So you let me know. I'll hop on a bus, probably not a bus, not a tube, and I'll come and see you. I really hope that we can make that happen.
I don't care what I have to do. I'm going to see you and it's going to be so amazing. So thank you, Katie. Thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you so much, Roseanne. And thank you for everything that you do. Yeah, I'm still listening. I'm going to keep listening. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You never know. Yeah. We never know. So thank you, woman.
Thank you.
Hey, loves, didn't you just fall in love with Katie's story? It's just extraordinary. It also stands for the proposition of how powerful we can be based on our thoughts and beliefs. Think about all that negativity she had carried for decades and worried that she would ever have a baby and didn't think she was worthy and was in a nasty habit of people pleasing. And of course, she created struggle on her journey. And now she is able to hold her baby girl in that beautiful room that you saw if you were watching the video. If you're just listening to the podcast, make sure you go watch the video because she has the most amazing wallpaper. It's like, oh my gosh, it's everything. But that's what can happen when you take control of what you think and believe. Think about what she did in that dark, dark moment where that nurse said, you know, this may be your only baby. She's like, fuck off. No, she knew in her soul that there was something more. And that is the power of mindset. It's time. If you've been struggling on your journey and it's way overdue that you started to think, believe, and take action like a woman who succeeds, go to my website, www.frommaybetobaby.com, and apply for an interview for one of my programs there. My methodology has helped women just like Katie all over the world make their mom dreams come true. Their results speak for themselves. And look, your mind and body work together. Chop, chop, woman. If you want to make 2024 your year, the time to do it is now. You still have time this year to make an incredible impact and create an entirely new result. And it ultimately comes down to you. So go to my website, www.frommaybetobaby.com, apply for an interview there. And look, if you don't have the mindset piece of the fertility puzzle in place, what the fuck are you doing? It's time to level up and get fearless, baby. Till next time, change your mindset, change your results.
Love this episode of the Fearlessly Fertile podcast? Subscribe now and leave an awesome review. Remember, the desire in your heart to be a mom is there because it was meant for you. When it comes to your dreams, keep saying hell yes.